Hello, everyone, and welcome. This is Bobby Laporte, and I'm CEO of Bobby Laporte & Associates and host of the Executive Aid Station. In today's competitive and dynamic executive marketplace, we believe that leadership is an endurance event, and we are here to provide the support that today's leaders need. Our show guests are executives who have successfully achieved a balanced life, as well as experts in fitness, health and wellness, and personal leadership. Executives who share their strategies for living and leading mindfully and gaining a competitive edge in the workplace. So I'm going to start a little bit different today and share a quote from today's guest, and it's as follows. He says, "I love technology and the power it can deliver to help people fulfill their potential and be successful. But over the course of my career, leading technical teams in diverse companies and across many different products and platforms, I have always considered myself a human being first. And while keeping pace with all the new technology today is my passion, I am most proud of seeing my team develop first as people and as technology professionals second, while they build positive partnerships that directly impact our business." So my special guest today is Mike Hamilton, who is the head of information technology for MuleSoft, which is a Bay Area company and a leader in integration platform as a service. MuleSoft is now part of the Salesforce family. Mike has been a deeply technical and strategic leader in the technology industry for over 18 years, delivering successful technology solutions in SaaS, IaaS, and in PaaS environments. Lots of acronyms there. He's helped MuleSoft grow from 4 offices to over 12 worldwide, building policies and practices that fit the needs of exponential growth. But he's also particularly known, and this is what I love about Mike in the industry, for his strong ability to build teams and create cross-team wins and continually improve business processes. So, Mike, welcome to the Executive Aid Station show, and thank you for being our guest today.
Hi, Bobby. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. I'm really looking forward to our conversation. So my first question is, you have a degree in cellular and molecular biology, which when I first learned that about you, I was really surprised. So why and how did you make the transition to IT?
Well, it was interesting. After I got out of college, every job that I had gotten after that, regardless of what it was in, focused on my computer skills. So you know, you have to remember this is the mid to late 1990s, and so back then computer skills weren't taken for granted. They weren't sort of table stakes back then. And I had learned to program when I was 12 years old, and so technology had always been something I was fascinated with and deeply interested in. So the transition ended up being that just I was pulled into technology related issues in places that I worked, and it made sense to me to make the transition to doing that full time, because what I noticed is that there was a need for people who understood technology and could see business process or other things that are broken to sort of join forces and get in there and solve problems for the business in ways that the business didn't even know that was on the table. So that really excited me and got me fascinated in that.
So you found the two to be naturally related. And I think it's what really interesting for me, the intersection of the two and how that has really helped you to develop a very different kind of leadership style than I've seen from a lot of technologists and technology leaders.
Right. It's all about knowing something for sure. And I think that's where science has enhanced my ability as a technology leader, because when I get into a process or I'm getting into a problem we're trying to solve for the building or for the business, I really want to know that we can solve it. I want to have confidence that we're doing the right thing. And the scientific method sort of gets you to that point of confidence and knowing that we can do something and that it will have the result we're looking for.
So you've been a leader in the tech industry for almost a couple of decades now, and you've seen many evolutions and changes. Can you touch on your strategy for leading successfully in such a fast-paced and challenging environment?
Absolutely. Change is the constant in the technology industry. It's literally the only constant, in fact. I don't know how many industries disrupt themselves as often as the technology industry does. I think throughout history we don't have any examples of something disrupting itself the way the technology does. So change is really the constant.
Right.
And given that, what you need then is people. You need a team, for example, that thinks about the technology that's coming and how it can disrupt what we do now. So what are we doing now? what's coming down the pipe that could make us do that better, that could disrupt us in some way of what we're doing, and how can that enhance what we're trying to solve for. So the most important part of that, though, interestingly enough, is a team. Like, you need a team that thinks mm-hmm. that way. And when I first made the transition into leadership, one of the things that I realized very quickly was that when I was on the technical side of the business and I was more in the architect type role, I had to come up with all the answers. That was my job. You know, you have to come up with all the answers. And when I went into leadership, it became very clear to me early on that I can't have all the answers, and what I need instead is a bunch of people that are really skilled and really motivated and engaged with the business and cognitively engaged with the business to help us see these opportunities to really enhance what the business is delivering. And so that, to me, is at the core of my strategy, that we have to be looking for what's coming. You know, we need to get the puck where it's going, not where it is now. And that's right. Really how IT can add the most business, like the most value to the business gets added by IT in that context, when we're looking to disrupt ourselves, when we're looking for how are the changes that are coming going to affect us. That's, to me, the value that we add, and that's the strategy. And I think that's a strategy that any business can employ. I think every business has to consider themselves a tech company in some ways. I think technology can enhance mm-hmm. anything that much. And as a result, we have to bring along with it that mindset that we're going to be disrupted, the status quo is going to change, and what we really need is a team of people that are looking to make the most out of those opportunities.
Yeah, I think one of the points that you made that is, I think, is really important, and particularly for technical professionals, when you've established that technical competency, that's the skill that you have and the work that you did. And as you said, you are used to having the answers. You're the one who defines what's happening and is more directive. And then you move into leadership roles. I think for technology professionals, it is very challenging to be able to, like, give that up and to say, I don't have all the answers, and to hire, as you have at MuleSoft, really smart people who can, you know, help to fuel the success of the organization and support the business and all of that. But I think in the IT world, I think it's even more difficult, and you've really successfully made that transition to say, look, I mean, I know some of this, but I don't know all of it. And the only way to be a successful leader in almost any field today is to acknowledge that there's so much uncertainty and dynamic change happening that what you've done in the past very likely isn't going to serve you well in the future. So the only way that you can kind of build a plan and develop those answers is to sort of crowdsource them together with the people that work for you.
Exactly. And there's the human components of sort of motivation and curiosity really help you expand your net. So when you're a leader, you know, when you're an individual contributor, you have your own net of things that you look at, and you say, like, I'm going to throw my net into the tech world, and I'm going to search for things that are going to both satisfy my interests as well as solve problems for the business. In a leadership role, you get to cast a much wider net, but you really have to be open to casting the net wider. Like, you have to have people you believe in, that you have confidence in, and that have that same passion that you do. And in some cases, you instill that passion in people. You know, you instill that motivation. Change can be a little bit daunting, for example. So if change is the constant, it's important as a leader to infuse in your team an excitement about that change. That, like, look, you know, disrupting ourselves is the normal, but let's go and find the best way to do things. So I love it. Initially, it was a little shocking to me to not be the person who had to come up with all the solutions. But right. then as I saw the net that my team could bring in of, like, all these different ways of looking at problems and how we can solve them for the business, it really got me even more excited about my role in leadership. So that was a cool transition for me. It's just not something I would have expected going into a leadership role.
Right, right. So let's talk a little bit more about your success at MuleSoft, because, I mean, you, as I said in the intro, had some amazing success there in being able to, like, scale your team and support a very fast-growing and super successful business. What can other IT professionals in similar roles or organizations do differently to help to achieve the kind of success that you have at MuleSoft? What are some of the sort of foundational things that you bring to the role that you're in?
So I think that the core of everything is hiring people. Like, who you hire is important. And there's a quote that our founder said at one of our offsite events that really stuck with me. He said, when you're early on in a startup, you have to wear a lot of hats. And when he was starting MuleSoft, he wore a lot of hats. And he said, the biggest benefit that I ever brought to the company was every time I realized that I needed to take a hat off, the person I hired to wear that hat had to be better at that job than I was. And that really stuck with me. And I think from a leadership perspective, in a high growth company that's, you know, making humongous strides, that's probably the key fundamental element. It's not enough just to say, like, I'm finding somebody to do this job. It's actually what we're aiming for is the person who's going to bring extra value to that role and take the burden off. And there's a sort of an S-curve that all companies go through. They start, in the kind of slow growth phase, and then they ramp up into more of the exponential growth phase if you're lucky enough to get there. But then that growth into that sort of transition into exponential growth comes with it new demands, and eventually you have to start thinking about how are we going to grow and scale this. And the only way to scale it is to bring in really, really good people that are passionate about what you bring them in to do. And at the same time, there's an element of trust that goes along with that as well, that they need to be people that you can trust, that are collaborative, that get the goals of the business and sort of want to work together and partner to make the business successful. So I think at the core, that's a key component of it. And I would say, having worked for MuleSoft and now working for Salesforce, that one thing I could advise anybody in a company that's going through rapid growth is to establish a set of values. I think that more so, you'll see people do things like establish mission statements, or they'll establish objective and key result maps, for example. And that's mm-hmm. more about the work that's getting done. But I think outside of the work that's getting done, it's important for businesses to establish a level of principles that say, like, these are the sort of guiding true north markers for us, that, you have to do these things. We always do these things. And it allows there to be accountability through all the layers of the organization on what's important at the level of the principles of the organization. That's some advice that I would really give anybody that wants to understand how to sustain high growth. It sounds like not your core business. Establishing principles, it doesn't sound like our core business. Let's just focus on growing the core business, and we'll figure out the principles later. But actually, I remember a point where the MuleSoft hit before we had set those principles, where it seemed like our culture wasn't growing with the company. The culture was something mm-hmm. people held dear and valuable to them. And when we established the core values of the company, that these are the values we run the company on, there was a pivot point where it got a lot easier for us to align and agree on how we were going to operate. And I can't emphasize the importance of that enough. I think it was one of the pivotal moments in MuleSoft's evolution, where it's just this rocket ship that's blasting off into space at these high speeds, really had the momentum that it needed, and by having these principles to align with. So,
wasn't one of the questions that I had suggested to you, but it brings to mind this culture deck, or what you call it, the culture deck. But I think one of the things that you've done in building your team, and now in alignment with the core values that you just talked about that were established at MuleSoft, you have kind of a set of guiding principles, and sort of like within the organization, like a mini definition of the culture that you want the IT team to be able to, come on board with and inculcate, and guiding principles for your team specifically. Can you talk a little bit about why you decided that was important, and how do you use, well, I don't know if you still use it, but how did you use that in MuleSoft? What kind of impact do you think it had as your team was growing?
When the team was really small, it was easy for me to be a part of a lot of the day-to-day operations and decisions. And what the CEO of MuleSoft would tell you about that is that there was a signature Mike Hamilton to everything that my team did. He'll tell you that was the case throughout the evolution of my team. But as the team grew, that signature sort of Mike Hamilton on the business was one of the things that I wanted to make sure we maintained. And what that had to do with was, signature Mike Hamilton meant that there was thoughtfulness put into the services that we delivered, and there was thoughtfulness and strategy put into the way we approached problems and how we solved things for the business. And I didn't want to lose that, and neither did my team, quite frankly. But we knew as we scaled, it was going to be a lot harder to do. So we set up core values for the team and said, like, look, these are really the principles that we operate under. For example, we won't be the department of no, right? We will not be the department of no. It doesn't mean we say yes to everything, because we won't have the resources to say yes to everything. And we're going to have to make some key decisions every once in a while on something and defer it or push it down the road. But ultimately in everything, we're not just going to be automatically, no, my process doesn't tell me that I can do that, or this procedure doesn't work that way. That's not how we're going to be. When somebody comes to us with something, we want to be engaged with them and understand what the real challenge is and help them work through it. So that's why I felt it was so important, was to retain that level of service. We started with a high bar. We wanted to keep that high bar going. Mm-hmm. But we wanted to expand the services we offered to the business. And so to do that, we really had to establish some core ways of thinking about how we delivered service to the business.
And as the company, has your team's grown, the company grown, have those kind of guiding principles and values, have any of those evolved or changed? Or you pretty much have the same ones that you did in the beginning when the department was just, you know, you and one or two other people?
We kept the same values, but the nuances and the stories and sort of folklore mm-hmm. that go along with it changed over time. So I think that it became more razor defined as time went on. And what I found was that it was really important to reinforce those principles periodically. So whether that was through an all-hands-off-site event, which we did for my team twice a year, or whether that was in one-on-ones, or whether that was in IT all-hands meetings that were, you know, just everybody that we could possibly get together based on time zones, it was really important to constantly reinforce those values, but in nuanced ways, and applying them to specific scenarios that were live right now. So the principles really never changed, but the way we talked about them did, and kind of the folklore and mythology that went along with that did as well. And what I mean by folklore and mythology is that you start to develop these series of stories that you can tell about your history and about the way you've delivered, you know, quality to the business that live on well past the moment when they happened, but that deliver kind of that sort of similar view of the values and apply some people to it so that it's not just like Mike dictated this and he handed this down from on high and that's why we operate this way, but rather we operate this way because of how we saw ourselves being successful and we came up with these core values and Paul was involved in this one and Andrew was involved in this one and these stories key in on these things and we can tell the stories to other people that join the team and it becomes a part of their identity. So I think in addition to values, we more than changing the values, we actually developed more of a shared sense of identity around the values that yes. really brought a lot of value to it.
I'd like to talk a little bit about, you and I have talked about this quite a bit, about positive psychology and kind of the application of positive psychology through positive leadership. So I know as a scientist and as someone who's really interested in studying and understanding human behavior, you've been working to try and implement some of the elements of positive leadership and positive psychology with your team. So tell us a little bit about why you've been interested in positive psychology and how has it change the performance of your team.
Yeah, I love talking about this with you, as you know. We could probably talk for hours on the topic.
Right.
But in general, for me, it boils down to talent as a resource and how you get good people. So if you look at industrial sort of revolution thinking around, like, people are cogs, and you buy cogs to run the machine, and if your cog breaks, then you buy another cog, and you just keep running the machine. And I think that's, like, the old school mindset of management. And I actually read something once that said that nobody's really sure that that was actually the school of thought at the time, just that that seems to be what we look back on that time period and think about. The people are replaceable. They don't really bring a lot of value to their work, and they should be replaceable. That's how you should run your business. The Silicon Valley obviously challenges every component of how workplaces function.
Right.
But in particular, talent is a scarce resource. And so you don't look at cogs as being replaceable anymore. It's not a mindset we can accept here because it just doesn't work. You're looking for unicorns instead. And I make the joke, in fact, that I'm not only looking for unicorns, but I'm trying to operationalize farming unicorns. Like, I want to grow unicorns because we kind of have to. Like, how else are you going to do this? Unicorns are hard to find, right? In positive psychology, the idea here is that, you know, using things like strength-based development, where I'm going to task somebody with things that I know they're going to kill and they're going to be great at, in addition to helping them develop in some areas where they need to develop, but with some coaching and some guidance, if right. I can combine these things, I can really get the best possible result. You know, what I really want, and the reason that positive psychology means so much to me as a leader, is that I want people to be engaged, and I want them to be cognitively engaged. I want them in the business. I want their mind in the business and looking for the best possible solutions that we can come up with to solve problems. But to get that, I have to change my game as a leader. I have to give them an environment that is permissive enough and encouraging enough to like draw that out of them and let them know that it's a safe space that they can speak up, that they can offer their ideas, and they're never going to be shunned or looked at weird because they suggested something counter to the way we've done things in the past. So I found it to be tremendously effective. Again, it boils down to still for me, you know, I'm no longer in the days when I can solve all the problems. I'm no longer right. in the days where it's my job to come up with this by myself. I'm in a world where I need to hire the best people. I need them to be happy, and I want them to be effective in their role. And so positive psychology has really given me a lot of tools to help move the needle on that for my team and really give them the environment that's going to help them be successful and grow as people.
You mentioned what you just shared with us, talking about how challenging it is to work in Silicon Valley in the Bay Area. And it's such a demanding 24/7 wired environment. And I know that people continue to struggle with finding time for personal life. And you have a very, I think, interesting approach to that with your team. Your philosophy has always been a more holistic one, where you talk about work and life as more integrated as opposed to compartmentalized. Can you, you know, share with us what do you mean by that, and how do you share that with your team, and then how do you personally operationalize that for yourself?
Sure. So I look at human beings as needing a lot of different things, and one of the ways we find value in our society and our civilization is through our work. That's sort of natural. In the world of startups, though, in particular, finding value in your work has a whole other level of commitment associated with it. It's very demanding. It puts a lot of demands on you personally. And what I've witnessed that's a mistake that a lot of people make in the world of startups is that they say things like, you know what, I'm going to do this, but I'm just, like, another 6 months and I won't have, like, we'll be fine. Like, we'll be past this problem or whatever. And then I can get back to my personal life. I can take the guitar lessons I've always wanted to take, or I can finally take my wife out for a weekend, or I can finally coach my kids soccer. Just 6 months. That's all I need. And that 6 months never happens.
It never happens.
It never does.
Nope.
Because the business is moving at such a pace and has so many high demands that we're never going to get to that point. There's always going to be something else in 6 months. And so it's this lie that people tell themselves to help them get through the moment without thinking about more of the whole person. I personally believe, and I can say this from experience, that the ways that our personal life influences our professional life and vice versa are intertwined. It's not a case. One of the things I don't like about the way that people talk about work-life balance is that the work and the life part are separate, and it sounds like compartmentalization to me. In other words, that you compartmentalize your emotions in one context, and that's how you function in that context. And then when you switch context to your personal life, you operate under a different context, and those skills don't apply anymore, and you have a different set of skills you use. I've found that there are skills that cross over, and I've also found that there are enhancements that cross over. As an example, I like music. I like to play music, and playing music in my personal time and making sure that I make time to do that soothes me and helps me think more creatively because it's a part of my mind mm-hmm. that I draw upon that enhances my workability. By the same token, coaching soccer, like it would sound like, you know, I don't have time to coach soccer. I'm working in a startup. This is crazy. But by forcing myself to make time, saying, you know what, I'm going to make time to coach my kids soccer, the enhancements I get from working with kids give me other tools in my work life that I can use because there are so many things in common between coaching a soccer team and coaching a team of adults. There's still things that matter. And my really global point here is that they're not separate things. Work and life are not separate. They are intertwined in ways that the more committed we are to both, the more they sort of mesh together and put demands on us in ways that we kind of have to figure out. The story that I tell my team, though, which is kind of funny, is because I've told it so many times for me, it has to do with a scenario when I was in a really small startup and I was working a lot of hours, sometimes in the way into the wee hours in the morning. And I remember once I was on the phone with a customer until about 4 o'clock in the morning, and I wake up the next day and my wife is visibly upset with me. And I said, like, hey, you know, what's going on? And she said, like, you know, you were really nice to that customer last night. And I was like, yeah, you sure? And she's like, well, but they had you up until 4 o'clock in the morning. And I was like, well, you know, they're a customer, and I was trying to help them through this problem. And she said, well, but you lost your temper with the kids the other day, you know? And I was like, well, yeah, you know, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that. And she's like, but wait a minute, though. Like, that customer was obviously inconveniencing you. Like, and it was a terrible time right. for you to be on the phone. So you have the skills to be nice and be pleasant with somebody till 4 o'clock in the morning, but you don't have the skills not to lose your temper with your kids. And I was like, whoa, like profound moment here. Professionally, I had developed the skills a long time ago to have somebody upset with me on the phone or on a conference call in a high-stress situation that I apparently had the skills to deal with, but for some reason, cognitively, my mind didn't make that connection until that moment. And I realized that our mind is our mind always. We are the constant. In work-life balance, the constant is us. It's me. I'm the constant.
Right.
And for me to be able to be successful on all of those fronts, I have to look at myself as one continuum through those events. That, like, I have to be there. And where mindfulness comes to play in a big way is being present. You know, when I'm in a meeting, I tell my team, there's a tendency to feel like a leaf floating in a river. And I know when my mind feels this way, because we go from meeting to meeting to meeting, we have all these different things we're doing, and we look at our calendar, and our calendar sets our day, and we're like a leaf floating through the river. And whenever I feel like a leaf floating through the river, I realize that I'm allowing the momentum of my day to carry me instead of driving my day more like a salmon swimming upstream. If I'm in a meeting, I need to bring purpose to that meeting, because otherwise I'm wasting my time and I'm wasting everybody else's time as well. So when I'm engaged in a meeting, I need to be present, mentally present. And by the same token, when I'm coaching soccer with my children, or even if I've just taken them out to ice cream, or if I'm out to a dinner with my wife, that those things require the same amount of presence, and that's a constant skill that transcends all of the worlds that I live in and I function in. And so, you know, really, that's where mindfulness kind of ties it all together for me. That work-life balance isn't this compartmentalization thing, but it's really about managing ourselves through the continuum of our lives. How do we bring value to every scenario we engage in, and how do we make the most of every opportunity?
I love that. I really appreciate you sharing that with us. Yes, I had heard that story about the client at 4 a.m. and then that kind of aha moment that happened for you, and I also completely agree with the analogy that you're creating around how work and life aren't compartmentalized, the skills that you're building and the practices that you use, you should be able to apply in both personal life and professional life. And by doing that, you create value across all the domains of your life. And it is that sort of more holistic approach that I think is the only way to really survive in this kind of, not just survive, but thrive in this kind of environment.
Absolutely. The tech industry drives us at such a frenzied pace, and it does require a change in thinking to be successful in it.
So before we wrap up, tell me about what are some of the projects you're working on, things that you're excited about now, whether it's personal or professional?
So I'm working on what I'm going to call, at least tentatively, Mindful Mondays with Mike. And really what this is about is trying to bring more of a mindfulness approach to every week with my team. Now that I'm with Salesforce, I have an extended team, so my team's grown a bit. And I want to bring the same sort of approach to managing larger teams, which means I need to operationalize that. So I'm going to be working on some short curriculum, like 15 to 20 minutes tops for every Monday, where we sit down and we go through something kind of philosophical, you know, that's about our, that really applies to work or life in some way. And that I encourage them to use some kind of a tool for the week, like whether it's mindfulness or just giving them some encouraging words about how to, you know, charge forward in your meetings and define purpose before you walk into a room, that sort of thing, so that I can reuse it. So I'm really looking to create something that I can not only reuse but share with other people, because I'd love to get the collaboration out of that effort. So that's really what I'm excited about right now. I think that it's a way that I can help scale this approach, because my team, you know, got to a certain size at MuleSoft, and I really want to understand how can I do this in a much larger scale.
Well, that sounds really exciting. It's definitely something that I'm interested in as well. And maybe what we can do is, once you've had an opportunity to have several of these, I love this Mindful Mondays with Mike, we can maybe come back and revisit that topic with you, and you can share with us how that worked with your team and what the impact was, and, you know, how you were able to introduce it and what kind of results you had. So let's keep that for possibly a future second episode of the Executive Aid Station.
Awesome. That sounds terrific.
So what's the best way for our listeners to stay in touch with you?
So they can feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn, and also you can reach out to me via email at mikehamiltonca@gmail.com.
@gmail.com. Okay, great. Got it. We'll make sure all of this is in the show notes. Mike, thank you so much. We've covered a lot of ground, not as much as we maybe had hoped, but there's so much really good, practical information in there. And you know what a tremendous respect I have for you as a leader. And I wish you and your team, your MuleSoft now Salesforce team, all the best. Thank you again for being on our show today. I'm sure that our listeners will appreciate your valuable advice and insights. And for those of you who are listening, that's it for today's show. Please visit our website, www.bobbylaporte.com, and sign up for our Executive Aid Station updates. I look forward to sharing our next episode of the Executive Aid Station with you soon, so stay tuned.